Turn with me, if you would, to 2 Corinthians 8. And this week and next week, we're going to be in chapters that deal a little bit with money and finance. And so this is why I thought this would be a good time, especially in the summer, where in many cases we have a little bit more free time and we can focus on it. I want to share at the end, as you can see in your handout, from this book called The Seven Money Types, Tommy Brown. He has been on the program with me before. Discover how God wired you to handle money. And I think this will help you understand a little bit more about your own personality and maybe some of the differences. In this class, oftentimes we've given you information about how to determine what your personality is, what your spiritual gift is. This will be another opportunity for you to kind of think about the money type that you might have, and might explain some of the conflicts you have in marriage or conflicts you've had in your family, or maybe just a little bit more of your strengths and weaknesses. And it's a fascinating book. So this is why I thought, if you wouldn't mind, we're going to, as we oftentimes do, work our way through some of the scriptural material and then give you some practical application. And when you're done, if you say, okay, this was interesting, but I probably need to take the test to actually see where I come out, I'm going to give you a link so you can take a free test. So is that a good deal? And then before we go to lunch, you can kind of figure out where you stand on all of that. But let's, if we can, turn to 2 Corinthians 8. And here, Paul, in this chapter, starts kind of a theology of giving. And so we will start it this week. We will end it next week. And here he's inviting the believers in Corinth to help relieve the poverty-stricken church in Jerusalem. Because of the intense persecution of being Christians in the midst of a Jewish culture, the Christians there were suffering. And so this is, if you will, the first kind of mission giving that we have inscripturated. And of course, what we do here in the church to support the various missionaries around the world. And so he clearly wants the church in Corinth to understand what giving really means, and uses this as a way to help them even evaluate their own spiritual kind of circumstances. And then, as I pointed out, I want to share some things from this book. And Tommy Brown, by the way, is a pastor, but he's also been in the financial area for years and really began to identify seven different kinds of money types that people have. And then, as a pastor said, you know, as I begin to look at Scripture, this correlates with various characters in the Bible. So we'll go through some of that as well, and hopefully you will understand how you and others begin to handle your money. So we'll get into that in a little more detail. But let's first of all pull out our Bibles. We're going to learn to look at the first 15 verses here in chapter 8. Paul says, "We want you to know, brothers, about the grace of God that has been given among the churches of Macedonia. For in a severe test of affliction, their abundance of joy and their extreme poverty have overflowed in a wealth of generosity on their part. For they gave according to their means, as I can testify, and beyond their means of their own accord, begging us earnestly by the favor of taking part in the relief of the saints. And this, not as we expected, but they gave themselves first to the Lord, and then by the will of God to us. Accordingly, we urge Titus that as he had stated, so he should complete among you this act of grace. But as you excel in everything, in faith, in speech, in knowledge, in all earnestness, and in our love for you, see that you excel in the act of grace also. I say this not as a command, but to prove by the earnestness of others that your love also is genuine. For you know the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ, that though he was rich, yet for your sake he became poor, so that you, by his poverty, might become rich. And in this matter I give my judgment. This benefits you, who a year ago started not only to do this work, but also to desire to do it. So now finish it as well, so that your readiness in desiring it may be matched by your completing it out of what you have. For if the readiness is there, it is acceptable according to what a person has, not according to what he does not have. For I do not mean that others should be eased and you burdened, but that as a matter of fairness, your abundance at this present time should supply their need, so that their abundance may supply your need, that there may be fairness. As it is written, whoever gathered much has nothing left over, and whoever gathered little has no lack." So again, we look at the difference between these two churches. the church in Corinth, because it was a maritime culture and because of the affluence in this Hellenistic Greek world, had an abundance, and they wanted to then share out of their resources with the church that was poverty-stricken in Jerusalem. And so here, now that the church in Corinth has become healthy again, we've looked at that over the last couple of weeks, he actually challenges them to follow through with what they had originally planned, and that is to give a gift to Jerusalem. And they'd begun this collection for the needy there, but that had stopped because of Paul's problem with them in Corinth. So now he says, what you started, I want you to bring to completion. And now that the relationship has been restored, you see that he's again calling for them to generously give to the church there in Jerusalem. We can kind of divide that, you can see this in your handout, in two ways. First of all, there's the theological call, or the theological reason for doing it, and then there's the fellowship reason for it. The theological call, if you will, is that salvation should change a believer's view about money. If you can, for those of you that have become Christians maybe later in life, you perhaps see this more so than, say, some like Jarrett Stevens was talking about. When you become a Christian early on, maybe you don't see the contrast, but you might have seen, you know, when I was not a Christian, my view of money was very different than when I became a Christian. And so he's saying that one of the attributes of a person who has been saved is they view money and giving a little bit different. And we've seen this even today as we heard our testimony. Just amazingly how, in many cases, once we begin to realize that God owns it all, and I'm just a steward of the relationships, and I'm just a steward of what God has given to me, you view giving very differently than other individuals. And so then he begins to also make the point that Christ became poor, that we, in a sense, might become rich in the Lord. So the first argument for why they should continue their giving is, number one, theological. The second one is in terms of fellowship. Because by this one-time gift, the church in Corinth would be expressing their unity in the body with other believers. And just as you give to missions here, or maybe you've traveled on short-term mission trips and things of that nature, by giving to others, you sort of feel yourself part of the larger body of Christ. And here, those in Jerusalem primarily were converted Jews. There may have been a few Gentiles, but primarily these were Messianic Jews. And interestingly enough, primarily most of the individuals in the church in Corinth were Gentiles. So in some respects, before they became believers, you had Jews and Gentiles. Couldn't be more divided. But now, because they have both accepted Jesus Christ, they're all part of the body. And so again, this is another argument he's making in these passages for why we should be giving and why they needed to be giving even in that day. Now, to illustrate his thoughts, he makes another point, and he talks about the churches in Macedonia. Paul was in Macedonia. He gets the Macedonian call. He goes now to Philippi and Thessalonica and Corinth and all the way down to Rome. But as he is in those churches there in Macedonia, he uses them as an example, because here, those churches were no more affluent, perhaps, than the church in Jerusalem. They're certainly less affluent than the church here in Corinth, but he's pointing out that here, even though they, in their poverty, did not have much to give, they gave what? Sacrificially. And so while Paul was reluctant to take their gifts, he seems, if anything, they were doing the begging. They were begging him to take these resources to them. If you've ever been in a situation where somebody who you know is poor and wants to give you something, you know that kind of feeling. You know, you just feel awkward. You know that they're maybe having trouble rubbing two nickels together, and yet they give you a Christmas present, or they give you a birthday present, or they ask you to go and to give that to the church, or whatever it might be. And this is kind of what Paul found himself in. But nevertheless, the church in Macedonia wanted to give, and so he uses this as an example. If the church in Macedonia, in these various churches and believers in Macedonia, wanted to give to those in Jerusalem, then how much more should the church in Corinth, with their affluence, be willing to give as well? So in light of what God was doing among the Macedonians, Paul believed that now, if nothing else, the church in Corinth enjoying God's grace would benefit as well. And so he then explains that he puts Titus in positions of authority. We're going to come back to that in just a minute, starting in verses 16 and following, to actually administer that so that there is integrity. And this, of course, gives them in the church of Corinth an opportunity to excel in this act of grace. And then in verses 13 and following, we see, just before we come to the next passage here, that they did not intend for the Corinthians to be poor while the church in Jerusalem becomes rich, but rather just out of a sense of fairness. And he uses this word fairness because what he's saying is, you know, right now you're wealthy and they're poor. There might be a day when they become wealthy and you're poor. So your giving might eventually come back to you. And so it's an interesting concept that he puts out there. Don't always assume that you living in Corinth, which was one of the more affluent areas in the Roman Empire at that time, that you will always be affluent. There may be a time when they have to give to you in the midst of your poverty or because of a famine or because of persecution or something that you cannot imagine. So again, that was kind of the idea there. And then he reminds us that, again, the ability of those in Macedonia to give was, in a sense, grace that God had given to them. Matter of fact, he says, God's grace in their work prompted a unique perspective. They gave themselves what? First to the Lord, and then by the will of God to us. They gave themselves completely to God, and so as a result viewed their lives, including their possessions, as something that belonged to Him. And so by comparison, the Corinthians did not stop with the Macedonians. In verse 9, he really talks about what Christ actually did. Christ became poor that we might become rich. And I think this is really talking about the position of Christ before the incarnation. Think about where Jesus is, creator of the universe, comes and now becomes a human being, born in a stable, raised in Nazareth, eventually spit upon, dies a horrendous death, all in order that we might become spiritually rich. And so he makes the contrast between Christ becoming poor that we might become rich. And then finally, he concludes here with this idea of the offering. First of all, as I mentioned before, finish what you've started. Second of all, our desire and wishing to complete the task is no substitute for action. Just because you intended to do something isn't good enough. You needed to do it. Sometimes you hear the phrase, well, I intended to do that. Well, yes, but that didn't finish the task, did it? I intended to do the dishes. I intended to clean the house. I intended to get that job done. But again, he's pointing out that we should complete the task. And then finally, we'll get into this more next week. The size of the gift could correspond to the means by which the individual could possibly give. And so we'll certainly look at that in next week's look in chapter 9. But let's finish off chapter 8 first, and starting now in verse 16. But thanks be to God who put into the heart of Titus the same earnest care I have for you. For he not only accepted our appeal, but being himself very earnest, he was going to you of his own accord. With him we are sending the brother who is famous among all the churches for his preaching of the gospel. And not only that, but he is also appointed by the churches to travel with us as we carry out this act of grace that is being ministered by us for the glory of God himself and to show our goodwill. We will take this course so that no one should blame us about this generous gift that is being administered by us. For we aim at what is honorable not only in the Lord's sight, but also in the sight of man. And with them we are sending our brother whom we have often tested and found earnest in many matters. But who is now more earnest than ever because of his great confidence in you? As for Titus, he is my partner and fellow worker for your benefit. As for your brothers, they are messengers of the churches for the glory of Christ. So give proof before the churches of your love and ever boasting about you to these men. And so now he reminds us that, again, churches, if they want to be effective, need to entrust their financial gifts to individuals that are trustworthy leaders. in just a minute, when we talk about the seven money types, one of those seven money types is Aaron. And in the Old Testament, you can't think of anybody who had more money passed through his hands than Aaron, the high priest. And yet, as we'll see, he was a man of great integrity. And here we see the same kind of concept here in the New Testament, because now he commends this gift that will be given by the church in Corinth and be taken to Jerusalem to be in the hands of three brothers who would take up this offering and then be entrusted with taking that offering there and not skimming off the top. Now, again, one of the things that scholars say, you saw this in some of the commentators, is that Paul purposefully distanced himself from any kind of gathering so that none of his enemies could accuse him of that. Remember, again, this is in the context where there were traveling speakers, and they would come and they would take up a free will offering of some sort, and of course that would then allow them to go to the next town. And even if they collected for something else, there was never the understanding as to whether or not this was going to this person's pockets or going to the next opportunity. And so Paul specifically makes sure that he distanced himself from those kinds of activities. You got to love those ministries over the years that have done the very thing. Billy Graham Organization is a good example. Most of us ministries are a member of the Evangelical Council for Financial Accountability. Different kinds of things that really provide a level of integrity and security so that if somebody gives to a ministry, they understand that that is the case. And a lot of that goes back to this very clear idea of where Paul made it very possible for there to be the highest level of honesty and integrity so that in as individuals are giving, they know that their giving is going to actually have a purpose and make it to that particular target need. Instead of himself putting there, he puts all sorts of safety measures there. And we learn a little bit about this, and I found some of this in the commentaries, of these three brothers. First of all, there's one that's called a soul brother. And apparently this idea is that this is somebody who had a special heart. As we'll see in just a minute, when we talk about some of these money types, you have some individuals, when they hear about a need, they're the first one to say, okay, well, who's going to help us give to this need, you know? They're the ones that already have a heart for ministry. They're the ones that are sort of leading the charge sometimes to invest in various kinds of mission activities. And so the soul brother was somebody that obviously had a real heart for ministry and a heart for the circumstances that the believers in Jerusalem had. Then we have a famous brother, which is hilarious because we don't know that person's name. Apparently that brother was famous to everybody in Corinth, but not to those, but he was known to many. But the idea was, is he was well known and well respected. You know, again, I just mentioned a name, Billy Graham. Would you not think that the Graham Organization have high integrity? If somebody said, I'm going to collect some money and it's going to be used for this purpose. Or if Franklin Graham, who was in my studio a few weeks ago, said, we're going to collect this money for Samaritan's Purse, did you not believe that that money was going to go exactly where it was? And so this is the idea of the famous brother. He's well known. He's not somebody that we don't know, and is this guy got integrity? He's well known, and his reputation, hopefully his good reputation, precedes him. And then finally, the earnest brother. We all have one of those too. Those are the hard workers, right? He's earnest and energetic, willing to help. And those are the people that when, you know, when we do communion, somebody's got to click up all those communion trays. And there are certain deacons I found that just always the first ones to go and collect all the trays, collect everything, and put it all together. You know, they're just the busy beavers. They're the energizer bunnies. You know, they're always out there getting stuff done. And so in some respects, he's put together three different types of individuals who are the very kinds of individuals you'd want if you were going to be involved in some kind of fundraising for a ministry project. Then he comes to the conclusion here about talking about the glory of the Lord, or if you have a different translation, the glory of Christ. And here the idea is the ultimate collection is, if nothing else, an expression of this new relationship between the Jews, the converted Jews in Jerusalem, and the Gentiles, the converted Gentiles in Corinth. And he sees this as a great opportunity as well. And he concludes that they should give proof before the churches of your love. And this is the idea that by giving, you show that you are praying for those believers in Jerusalem, and it also gives proof of your love. So this is kind of a quick summary, if you will, of the 8th chapter of 2 Corinthians. And so what I want to do now, if you have your handout, you'll have some of the basic information there. But as we have always said, that at the bottom of the sheet, or in other places, we have PrestonWoodExamine.org. So if you find yourself wanting some of this information, maybe I should have typed it in there, but anyway, just remember PrestonWoodExamine.org. If later you want to find some of this material, we'll try to go through this fairly quickly. And given the fact that I did an hour interview with Tommy Brown, and even then we didn't cover it all, you can see that probably you're going to want to get a copy of the book and you probably want to take the test. But the concept is very simple. He's worked in the financial area for some time, but has also been a pastor, and he began to notice that as he did financial counseling as a certified financial planner and things like that, that there were people that sort of fit into different kinds of types, and they had certain strengths and they had certain weaknesses. But as an individual who's also a pastor, he began to also say, wait a minute, I think every one of these types has at least one biblical character that illustrates that. So what we're going to do is we're going to look at, and if you want to take some notes, I've given you some of the information there, but you can fill it out as we go along. We're going to look at 7 different individuals. And each one of them have a strength, what he calls an illustration of how they are in God's image, manifest that gift and that particular personality, and then a shadow or kind of the negative. And I will put this chart up continuously for those of you furiously taking some notes, because you will see this chart many times as we go through this. But again, you can see that we'll first of all talk about Abraham, and his gift is hospitality. We'll look at some of that. But then sometimes, because he is so self-sufficient, that's his shadow. Isaac is disciplined, but sometimes he's so disciplined, maybe he's struggling with the issue of fear. Jacob is beauty. He sees the possibility of something to create beauty, but sometimes indulgence. Joseph, he was the ultimate networker, wasn't he? He's making connections with the jailer. He's making connections with the Pharaoh. By the young age, he's the second in command in Egypt, but then sometimes, because he was such a wheeler-dealer, manipulation. Moses is endurance, dealing with the issue of endurance, but sometimes impatience. And then the last two, Aaron, humility. Individual who is wanting to meet everybody's needs, has great compassion, but sometimes instability. And then finally, David, of course, leadership, and can that lead to selfishness? So I want to work through all 7 real quickly, and at the end give you a test that you can go to online, and you can figure it out on your own. But by the time we go through this, I think some of you will say, I think that's me, or I think that's the person sitting next to me, or that was certainly my father. Oh boy, yeah, I can relate to this, or that's my mom, or something like that. So we'll go through that. So the first one, obviously, is Abraham. So let's see what we have for Abraham. When you think about Abraham, you know, there are lots of examples, but one of the ones that Tommy Brown uses is when Abraham has 3 visitors, he says, look at the words. It says, Abram ran to meet them, then he hastened into the tent, then he called Sarah to act quickly. This is a person that has the gift of hospitality. And we can certainly see how they want to, in many cases, use money to make others feel special and valued. And we have members of this class that certainly have that gift of hospitality. And the way they see money is a way to use that to minister to others. Each one of these, I'm going to give you some core characteristics. And each one of these core characteristics has a couple of paragraphs. So I am, again, if Tommy Brown are here saying, boy, you're zipping through this. I know, but we want to finish by 12 o'clock. That these are individuals oftentimes want to exceed expectations. They are very much putting others first. Again, if you know anybody in this class, you've been to some of our dinners and small groups and things like that, you know we are talking about people sitting in this room right now. They believe giving is a gift. They use the resources often to serve others, and sometimes they'll do it in ways that are unnoticed. You almost have to say, now who did this? Who made this? Or who put this together? And oftentimes, as we're talking about hospitality, they use food to show kindness. And so you can see that these are some of the positive aspects of what we've seen both in Abraham, or Abram, but also in those individuals. Now let's look at the other part of that, because there's a shadow side. That is, they are the ones that put everybody first. They're the ones that are pretty self-sufficient, and so sometimes their downside is you can't do anything for them. These are the ones, when you give them a gift, you go, oh, I don't need that, you know, I'm fine, don't worry about me. Mothers tend to fit in that category sometimes. You ask, what do you want for your birthday? You're never going to get an answer, right? You know, that's sometimes the case. But the characteristics, sometimes they have difficulty receiving generosity from others. Are slipping maybe sometimes in some negative ways into even superiority. And so then he gives a whole section on action items. If somebody has got that gift, somebody has kind of that gift of certainly wanting to address these issues of making people special and hospitality, then what should they do? And he says, first of all, embrace hospitality. That's the way God made you. Enjoy that hospitality. But also check your motives. You know, not only ask others what they want, but be willing to tell others what you want. And sometimes because they are so wanting to do hospitality, they may go overboard in their spending. And so this is where establishing a budget or learning sometimes to spend on yourself would be really important. So that would be the first characteristic of our seven. And that is, we mentioned just a minute ago, would be Abraham, hospitality and self-sufficiency. Let's look at our second one. Now, Isaac. Isaac, we're going to look at, he is a good illustration of those people from a financial money type, are really good with discipline, but sometimes their shadow problem is fear. So let's look at Isaac for just a minute. And again, Tommy Brown uses some examples. You have Isaac, he was tempted to go to Egypt just as Abraham had, but instead God directed him to stay. So instead of going to Egypt, he stays here, and now we see that he reaps from his crops 100-fold, and his wealth continued to grow. We see that in Genesis 26. And so these are individuals that when they look at money, they believe that money should be maximized. These are the kind of people you want in your company. They're seeing some of those resources and they're saying, you know, if we do these five or six things, I've got a spreadsheet and we do this, we can probably double your profit, or we can increase it fivefold, or we can do all sorts of things. And so their core characteristics are oftentimes that they're very disciplined. They probably have some charts. They probably have some graphs. They probably know their way around Excel. You know, they're really pretty good disciplined kind of individuals. They might even have 5-year goals and 20-year goals and things like that. They see the potential for recovery and restoration. They're the kind of people sometimes you want to bring in when a company is failing or when a company is having some difficulty. And you've seen some of these programs on television where they come in and they try to turn it around. Oftentimes they're really good and gifted in that particular area. They have a lot of persistence even in the midst of resistance. They recognize, and we're going to see a little bit more with Moses in terms of endurance, but they show some persistence there as well. They oftentimes will show restraint. And they love to win by getting the best deal. Tommy Brown talked about somebody that actually has his own jet airplane to fly from one corporate event to another. But then the other day he was talking about how he'd made a really good deal when he was at Kohl's. He's going, really? But, you know, he just loved that. You know, these are people that can tell you what they paid for gasoline yesterday, you know, and how they saved a few pennies on it, right? That's the kind of people that the Isaac people are like. Okay, what are their downside? Because they're so disciplined and they got everything controlled and they like everything under their control, what's their problem? Fear sometimes. They tend to be fearful. They tend to trust in their own efforts and work ethic, but sometimes they fail to enjoy some of the resources. So again, what should they do? Well, a person that has this kind of money type really needs to embrace the fact that, okay, discipline and maximizing money is what they're about. And that's what they're good at. And they shouldn't apologize for that, but recognize that that's the way God has constrained them and given them an opportunity to make a difference. And again, laying aside fear and trusting in God's faithfulness might be kind of one of the challenges there. Sometimes they need to lighten up a little bit and check in others with your money. Now, Tommy Brown tells the story that he says, I'm an Isaac. I'm the one that just likes to pinch every penny and likes to be really disciplined. But my wife is an Abraham, and she loves to spend money on hospitality. And this was a source of what? conflict, right? Have you ever had any conflict in your marriage? You know, ever had any conflict in your company? Ever had any conflict in your family? I mean, there's some people that like to plan way out and think about everything, and there are others that just instantaneously jump on it. I was telling Tommy Brown that a couple days before we'd had James Paris, and he was talking about the fact that one thing Christians might think about doing is maybe just taking $100 and invest it in Bitcoin because it might take off, and if nothing else. And I said, you know, there are probably some individuals that invested in Bitcoin before the program was over, and there are other people that had gone to every YouTube video they could find and read every book and every article they got in Bitcoin to decide whether or not they're going to spend $100. So, I mean, it shows the difference in personalities as it relates to money. Let me keep going to finish this. Abraham, Isaac, now Jacob. Jacob's a little different, and we'll see this, and that is he has the ability to see things that can be enhanced for beauty. These are great architects and things of that nature, but also interior designers and all the rest. And because they really like to spend money on making something look nice, their downside could be indulgence. And the example we can use is the one I used last week, interestingly enough, and I talked about Jacob, who had this meeting with God, and he had his head resting on a stone. Well, after he had met with God, he then reconstructs this stone pillar, and then he pours oil on it and calls the place what? Beth-El. El meaning God, Beth meaning home, the house of God. And so he has this appreciation for beauty. Of course, we also can think about Leah and Rachel. He has appreciation there as well. And so Jacob is the kind of individual that would use money to pursue pleasurable experiences. These are individuals sometimes want to take something and improve it. The example I used with Tommy Brown when we were on the programs, we had just been to Coffee and Cars, and some of us saw these cars. Now, if you had seen some of those cars before these guys spent enormous amount of money fixing them up, you'd go, that's just a piece of junk, you know, and now see what they do. Or you've been in homes where maybe the husband or especially the wife has just turned this into an incredible show place, just beautiful home. And that's something that, again, shows their ability to see beauty beneath the surface. Sometimes their generosity meets the restraint and verges with discipline. So sometimes they will spend a lot of money. Other times they'll be have an internal struggle between spending money and improving something and not. They're oftentimes drawn to beautiful things and experiences. But again, their emotions drive their purchases. They can walk into a Haverty's or a Weir's and say, I want it. And you're going, don't you want to look at the other couches? No, that's it, you know, and walk out the door with it just as quickly as they walk into it. So that's the positive. What's the negative side? Well, I think you can see that. They very quickly will spend money, you know, with some quickness, but that can lead to indulgence. And so some of the characteristics, they could be overspending to create appearances. Sometimes they like experiences, beautiful experiences, and they'll live a life full throttle, but they'll experience some kind of emptiness. So again, what are the action items for them? Well, to embrace the desire to bring beauty to the world. They are people that make the world more beautiful. Except the fact that they'll sometimes wrestle between hospitality and discipline. They'll have these internal conflicts sometimes. Remain others-minded. Embrace some of these financial boundaries. Keep attention off yourself. Sometimes it's real easy for them to draw attention to themselves. So we look at Abraham, Isaac, Jacob. Now let's talk about Joseph. Joseph's a pretty easy, simply because I think we all understand Joseph. He's the networker, isn't he? He makes connections, but sometimes that can lead to manipulation. And you think about this, he made connections, as I mentioned just a minute ago, with the jailer, all the way up to the Pharaoh, and by the time he's 39 years of age, he is the second in command in Egypt. Do you know those kind of people? They do networking, they do conferences, they put people together, they pull together conferences, they put together programs. This is something they do, and they recognize that money opens doors and makes connections. And so in many cases, they use money because that is what enhances their ability to bring people together. Some of their core beliefs. Well, they view access to resources as a sacred trust. They have the ability to create and streamline financial systems. Oftentimes they can be accountants and things like that as well. They believe helping others succeed is integral to their own personal success. They get real excited when they see somebody else succeed because of the work they've done behind the scenes, or even if they've been in the front as well. The downside is that these are people that are real dealers, but sometimes if they're not careful, they can be accused of manipulation. Their characteristics are seeing resources and connections as power, or sometimes even giving to boasting. You know, they play the game of who do you know and I know and name dropping, those kinds of things. So again, the action items: embrace your desire to connect. That's something that you do. You put connections together. Tell the truth. Carefully connect. Trust but confirm your instincts. Develop thick skin. Guard your dreams and share those selectively. Joseph had a great dream, but he probably shared it a little too much. If there's any place where you see a possible sin in Joseph's life, because he really is almost the type of Christ, because he is almost sinless, it is that maybe with the sharing of the dream is a little bit of boasting there. And so again, we can see that characteristic in Joseph, and that shows up in some of these money types. Couple more real quickly. Moses, that will be easy to see because in one sense God understood that if Moses is going to lead the children of Israel, especially leading them as they wander in the wilderness, you need somebody that has this ability to really endure, to persevere. And so again, they show persistence, endurance, but they also sometimes, because of that, show impatience. Let's look at this. I mean, you think about what Moses had to endure. He first of all had to endure the complaining of the people. Think of the number of times, whether it's before the Red Sea, or whether it's we don't have water, or we don't have food, or whatever it might be. But then he also had to implement all the commands and processes God gave him so that the people could endure. And so a person that has this kind of money type, money should be carefully organized. I talked about one just a minute ago that might have discipline. These people are really organized. They have file folders. They know exactly where everything is, you know. If you were to die, all you have to do is pull out one notebook and you got everything you need right there, you know. They've got all the names and addresses and phone numbers. They got it all worked out. They are carefully organized. They know where all their stocks are. They could probably even tell you what that particular investment portfolio is doing right now today. Those kinds of things. Again, their core beliefs. They love order. They embrace financial rhythms. They recognize kind of the ebb and flow of those. These are oftentimes people in the stock market as well, people that make good investments. They view systematic giving as a secret to financial well-being. They often act as financial guides. A lot of them are certified financial accountants and planners and things like that. And they don't tend to worry too much about money because they have this sense of confidence. The downside is impatience. You know, they're so organized, they get real impatient with people that don't seem to understand the program. They can be extremely judgmental about how others handle money because they handle it so well, and they look over here and those other people look like they're being frivolous and irresponsible. Sometimes they care too much. They sometimes work too hard. So the action items again: embrace your desire to bring order and to endure. Mind your own money, not everybody else's money. Create rhythm of rest. Sometimes they need to rest because they're just workaholics. And embrace patience. And then what brings us to Aaron, who I alluded to just a minute ago. And Aaron, we see the very significant characteristic of humility, but sometimes that can lead to instability. And if you think about Aaron, as I pointed out just a minute ago, more money flowed through Aaron's hands probably than anybody else. Yet he was humble and considered what other people needed. He was not the first one to step forward and say, wait a minute, some of this promised land is for me. You know, he was quite willing to stay in the background. And so he sees that money should be used to serve others. So he's very much an others-centered kind of person. Because of that, sometimes these individuals are very innocent towards money. They have an awareness and concern for injustice. They're very upset about, you know, something that wasn't done right. They're compelled to do something. They oftentimes prioritize meeting human needs over accumulating wealth. In other words, they're more concerned about injustice. And I know of one individual that cares not a whit about money and is more concerned about injustice in individuals. And you just go, it's like money just flows through your hand. Well, even if it came in my hands, I'm just going to give it away anyway. And so that's kind of the Aaron personality. The downside is instability. When it came time to build the golden calf, who was front and center? Aaron. Very easily persuaded by others what others want. They're an easy target sometimes for marketers or advertisers or others. And they also they tend to like sometimes adventures at the expense of stability. So again, the Aaron people need to embrace the inclinations to use money to serve others because that's a good thing. They're the ones again that say, you know, if we have this money, we could improve this area of the business. If we have these resources, we could rebuild this particular section in the church, or we could reach out to those individuals, or we reach the unreached people groups. They discern perceived needs from actual needs. They understand a little bit more about that, but that's something they need to work on. Draw upon the strengths of both Isaac and Moses. Isaac, of course, in terms of beauty, Moses in terms of this kind of discipline, but also be skeptical about your cynicism towards money. They tend to be very cynical about people that might want their money, and so that is another example. And the seventh and final one is David. Now, again, his obvious characteristic is leadership, but that can sometimes lead to selfishness. And again, if you think about this, here, every single day, Goliath would stand forth and challenge the Israelites. You know, come and send a man to fight against me. And all of them would look down and pay no attention, and they would all be humiliated. And finally, David steps forth with confidence, and even is trying to be talked out of it by those around him. But he has this incredible kind of confidence. He can see beyond the problem to the goal. These are your leaders. And we see those so often. The people that build the businesses. The people that see beyond the problem to the goal. And so they see money as a tool to create new futures. And so they are very forward-looking kind of individuals. And they see how those finances can be used to build a new school or to refurbish a business or begin to help a family or whatever it might be. They inspire action. Not much grass grows along the feet of these individuals. They're moving all the time. They tend to be our financial leaders oftentimes. They're willing to share the spoils. Oftentimes they're underdogs. David certainly was an underdog. They're not necessarily the first person that you would pick to be a leader, but they certainly show those leadership characteristics over time. They desire to leave a financial legacy for the next generation. And I was just thinking about this today. Jarrett Stevens quoted from an individual that was at Peninsula Bible Church, Ray Steadman. And we always love to use Ray Steadman as an example because it probably wouldn't surprise you, but when Chuck Swindoll graduated from Dallas Seminary, he was picked most likely to succeed. Nobody was real surprised by that. But nobody would have picked Ray Steadman in that category. Ray Steadman was kind of in the periphery. A lot of the professors did not know him. And so when he goes out to California and develops a Peninsula Bible Church kind of in the shadow there of Stanford University and builds this incredible ministry, a lot of people, does anybody remember who he was? You know, and so here's a good example of kind of an underdog who becomes this great leader and certainly has had a profound impact. So, you know, some people graduate and you're just convinced they're going to be the great leaders, and some of the others demonstrate leadership over time. And there's a good example. And since he mentioned Ray Steadman, I thought I'd tell that fun story about Ray Steadman. Downside of people with this, these are the pushers and the high octane kind of personalities, is they can just mow over individuals if they're not careful because they've got this vision. And sometimes people seem like they're just obstacles in the way. So they're just so busy on their way that they can sometimes look very selfish. They can sometimes selfishly use people and resources, sometimes they can become complacent. So again, the action items, first of all, embrace your desire to create new futures with money and focus on legacy, but know your why and clear and keep that in focus so that you know why you're doing what you do, and draw boundaries and guard them carefully because you will exceed your boundaries with this kind of personality. Determine now to guard against selfishness by being generous, and remember that you are not what you earn. Sometimes they keep score by how much individuals have in the stock market or in their bank accounts. So if nothing else, those are the seven different money types. Now again, if you want to get a copy of the book, it's a Zondervan book. It's probably even available in our bookstore here. If not, I'll recommend that they get it. But you might say, okay, some of these connect a little bit more than others. You might circle one or two and say, these feel a little bit like me or like my spouse or my kids or whatever it might be. But let me now, if you want to, give you a chance, even at lunch if you want to pull out your smartphones, and take the test. You can go to TommyBrown.org/quiz. And I just put the first of, there's multiple sections you go through, but for example, on the first one here, it has a whole series of things that you might check. And then first of all, you select all that apply, and then you go back and say, okay, before I hit submit, let me uncheck those and select the top one or two so that you can kind of see that. And so then you go to the next chart, the next chart, next chart, next chart, next chart, and eventually then you get your answer, okay? So you can go to that quiz at your freedom, at your own pace, and you can think that through. And if you want to talk to someone and say, does that describe me or whatever, and you can kind of see how you've done. So if nothing else, there's a way you can take the quiz, or of course you can go through the book, because the book itself has a whole series of other questions. It has all sorts of things on financial well-being. It has even a set of questions in the back if you wanted to use this for a small group study. And I think he's just done a good job of once again helping us understand our abilities with money. So this week we spent some time in chapter 8 talking about money and finances. Next week we'll talk also about giving and tithing, and those will be the 2 weeks where we'll take some very important principles out of 2 Corinthians and begin to apply them to how we use our money. Parker?